Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm great, man.
Me too. I had a great night last night.
Yeah, you went out celebrating last night.
Out in the town.
Me, I stayed home with the wife and the kiddies.
You stayed home with the wife and kids. Both things that restaurateurs like to do and don't do enough of. I went out last night, and I went had a great dinner with a friend of mine, John Fisher, who was a guest on the show, mm-hmm. who's an instructor at Culinary Institute of America. Fred Price, a friend of ours, is a wine importer. Corey Hill, who's an expert on beer and working in Manhattan as well.
Also been on
there.
The show.
And Dale DeGroff was there as well, the cock, the most famous bartender in the world. And don't know when it's going to happen yet, but Dale is going to come and do a cocktail dinner at our new restaurant, Catherine Lombardi.
That's
and that's
great.
Very exciting. He's written The Craft of the Cocktail. Dale's been on the show. And we went out last night to toast Dale, who was nominated for a James Beard Award.
And let me tell you, Dale is one of the things that makes a great bartender, that makes Dale such a great bartender, is not just the fact that he's an historian, is not just the fact that he's a great drink maker and he's really talented at putting things together and knowing what they're going to taste like before he ever puts them together. But he is such a great storyteller.
Oh, he's great. Yeah, he's
just
terrific.
Just the best storyteller in all the land.
So watch the Catherine Lombardi website for the Dale DeGroff cocktail dinner coming up sometime. That's just an infant germ of an idea, but it's going to happen. And actually, Dale was nominated for a James Beard Award for out. And for those of you who don't know the food world, the James Beard Foundation and it has these awards every year. They're national in scope, and they're basically the Academy Awards of the restaurant business.
Absolutely.
And the award ceremony itself is a black tie affair in some swank place in New York. And Dale is up against, in the category of outstanding wine and spirits professional, he's up against Paul Draper from Ridge Winery, for Dan Duckhorn from Duckhorn Winery, Daniel Jonas, who is also someone we know very well, who is a wine importer, worked for Drew Newport for a long time, and is now the sommelier at Danielle, and he's mm-hmm. also a master sommelier, and Helen Turley, probably the most sought-after winemaker in the world.
Yeah, but those guys don't stand a chance against
that. I don't think so. I hope that you're right, and I think that you're right. I think he'd be great. We went to Pegu Club, which I'm going to recommend again if you're anywhere.
Place you heard us talk about a lot on the radio.
There's a link on our website if you look up Audrey Saunders or the Pegu Club, P-E-G-U, on restaurantguysradio.com. If you're listening in Jersey, it's on Houston Street in Manhattan. If you are listening in Hong Kong, fly here and go there and have a cocktail.
As far as I'm concerned, the place for cocktails in New York City right now. Just the barometer from which all other things are measured.
So we went there and I ordered a Ramos Fizz, which mm-hmm. is a classic old drink, and that would, when it was classically made, would be shaken by, because it's made with a raw egg white, and when you shake a Ramos Fizz, you're supposed to pass it down a line of bartenders. Like 12 bartenders are all supposed to keep shaking it. That's it's sort of a gimmick, you know, but it's supposed to be shaken a lot because it changes texture. And what the bartender did was he shook it, and then he handed it to Corey, and he handed it to Dale, and he handed it to me. And so we shook our own Ramos
Fizz. You supposed to hand it to your customers? I don't remember that being
well,
part
we're
of
sort
tradition.
Of in the biz, so it worked. And it was great. It was terrific. So I got it was like a make-your-own Sunday bar. It was super. So we did that, and then we went off to Beacon, which I will also recommend as a great restaurant in Manhattan. Waldy Malouf is the chef there. And Lee Chaslow is, I think, the mm-hmm. wine director, who was used to work in Jersey at our friend David Drake's restaurant.
Actually, I think Lee's the general manager.
Is he GM? Mm-hmm. Well, he's great. And and Waldy cooked for us, and I love when a chef cooks for restaurant guys, because five men sat down, and he sent out the first thing. He sent out a bunch of great meats, and it was one. We ordered some great wine, and it was delicious. But he sent over a hogshead.
Oh yeah.
Split down the middle.
Okay.
And, like, so this thing's smiling up at you? All right, well, one side is smiling up
so,
at you.
So, now hold on a second. One of you gets the cheeks.
No. There was a whole head. So, in the brain cavity were the brains.
Yeah.
And the tongue was sort of still in there, split.
Yeah.
And it was all there, man. It was all there. And what he did is he took everything out, and he didn't make it as a head. He didn't roast it as
a head.
I understand. But he put everything back into the head with its little mouth and its little teeth. It was so cool. It was so cool.
I'm sorry. I mean, I remember Grandpa bringing home the capuzzella, the sheep's head.
Yeah, but they roasted the whole head all together.
Many bad memories as an 8-year old.
It was great. It's kind of weird putting someone else's tongue in your mouth and it's just awful.
Awful. You're awful.
Anyway, good. It was great. We had a great dinner.
I bet you did. And there is nothing like that. There's nothing like being a restaurant owner or someone that a chef wants to show off to and letting that chef just kind of go off and riff on their own. It's fabulous.
And he was a very gracious host. So I recommend Beacon in Manhattan as well. And then also I ran into Nicolette Hahn Nyman and her husband Bill Nyman, who own Nyman Ranch. They're environmental activists as well. But, I mean, they own this great business. We had Nicolette on the show about an article that she wrote in the New York Times.
Yeah, almost a year ago we had her on.
And we had Bill Nyman on the show, and they've come out with the Nyman Ranch cookbook. And so Bill, I spoke to him last night. He's going to come back on the show. I was out for dinner. I got a cocktail dinner set up at La Casa Lombardi. I got Bill Nyman coming on the show. It's going to be great.
The beauty of our job is while we play... We work.
I got to figure out somebody.
That's not so bad.
To pay us for what we were going to do anyway.
There are a lot of really good things about this business, but going out to dinner and having people really kind of roll out the red carpet for you, and I'm not talking about radio show host now. I'm talking about restaurant owner. It's just one of the great pleasures of this business.
Well, and it's fun to know people, and it's fun. I think it's fun for the chef when they know you and they say, you know what, I can cook a hog's head for these guys. They're
right.
Not gonna,
no, without risk.
Send it out.
You can take risks without risking upsetting the patron.
Right. We're not going to run screaming from the room. And then we wound up, and I'll just give you the tale of my evening.
Sounds like a long evening. Okay. Pegu, Beacon, hog's head.
We wound up at P.J. Clark's. P.J. Clark's is also tremendous, and that's on the east side. And that's an old bar that is one of the oldest continuously operating saloons in Manhattan. It's operated right through Prohibition, because basically New York ignored Prohibition.
Well, not ignored. Just turned a blind eye.
Right. So it was recently purchased by a new group of investors who had to, structurally replace... parts of the floor. They took everything out, numbered all the pieces, and put them right back exactly where they were. I've been going to PJ Clark's for 20 years. I swear to God, it looks cleaner, but exactly like it did years and years ago.
That's a lot of work.
Speaking of pre-prohibition, we have the smoking ban taking effect in New Jersey on the 15th of April.
15th of April, you will no longer be able to smoke in restaurants
The 14th of April is Good Friday. But on the 13th of April, we're going to have a pre-prohibition party. At Stage Left Restaurant. We're going to have a smoker, and that'll be the last time you can legally smoke in restaurants. We're going to bring in all sorts of game and venison and all sorts of meat, steaks, and chops, and have big wines available. And for that one night only, we're going to allow smoking, including cigar smoking, in Stage Left Restaurant. It's going to be
the main dining room.
Pre-prohibition smokers. So
and for all of you non-smokers out there, don't panic. We have a completely separate room that non-smokers can go to and retreat to and not have to worry about being involved with any of the smoke. But one of the things we just kind of want to say is it's okay to smoke when you're not bothering anybody.
We'll be back in a moment with Melissa Clark, a writer of Chef Interrupted, delicious chef's recipes that you can actually make at home. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey, 1450, WCTC with The Restaurant Guys.
Hey, back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Melissa Clark. Melissa Clark has written for the New York Times, Food and Wine, Travel and Leisure, and many other foodie publications. She joins us to discuss her most recent of 14 acclaimed cookbooks, the wonderfully titled Chef Interrupted, Delicious Chef's Recipes That You Can Actually Make at Home. Hi, Melissa. Melissa?
Oh, can you hear me?
Oh,
yeah,
gotcha,
we can hear
now.
You now.
Sorry.
Hi, Melissa. Welcome to the show.
How are you both?
We're doing very well.
We're doing well. I love your book.
Thank you.
And I loved your book from before I read it or even owned it when I read about it in the paper and I said, Chef Interrupted, Sherry, get that book and get her on the show.
Melissa, you want to interrupt them sometimes?
I love it because the girl interrupted riff. I love that whole thing. Why don't you explain the title and why you chose it and how it's relevant?
Well, the title, actually, I had a really hard time coming up with the title. I knew what the concept of the book was way before I came up with the title. The concept was I had been co-authoring cookbooks with chefs for years. I worked on a book with David Boulay. I worked on a book with Claudia Fleming. I just finished one with Danielle Ballou. And so I knew how to take chefs' recipes that were really complicated and simplify them. But what I wanted to do in my book is I thought, I'm doing these chef's books and I'm simplifying the recipes up to a point that makes the chef happy. But I want to simplify them to the next level and make them even easier and make them easy enough for all my friends and for my parents and for me to make at home on just, a regular night without it being a big ordeal. So I knew that was my concept, but I could not think of a title for the life of me. I was going to call it Abbreviated Chef. And then my brilliant editor at Clarkson Potter came up with the title Chef Interrupted, and I thought, oh my God, that's perfect because of Girl Interrupted. It just made sense to me. So that's how the title came about. But the concept, I just knew that there was a market for this kind of, for a recipe that was inspired by chefs and that, took their recipes. Because, you guys know, chefs cook, their recipes are better than our recipes.
That's because I have an intern do all that other stuff that I don't want to do.
Well, there you go. See, and so do they. They have a team of sous chefs. They have all, an entire staff, chopping everything and, doing all the prep work. And I know that I don't have that at home, and most people I know don't have that. But I wanted to get those flavors, or at least something extremely close to those flavors. Without all that, without having a team of sous chefs working for you. So I knew that was a book I had to write.
Well, our chef starts with, okay, take the veal stock that you spent all day making yesterday.
Exactly. Or, peel the sweet bread. okay, we're not going to put that recipe, let's do something simpler.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you think that, and this is sort of, what do you think is the fate of most cookbooks? Do you think that, I think that a lot of cookbooks that are bought today don't wind up dog-eared and food-stained,
right,
for having been used, but wind up on the coffee table or on the shelf. What do you think about that?
No, I absolutely agree with you. But that was one thing I wanted, that's one way I wanted my book to be different. I really want people to take it into the kitchen and use it. I mean, you can. When I was writing it, I was thinking, well, when do people cook? When do we, drag out a cookbook? I mean, even if we only use it, once or twice a year, when do we take it off the coffee table? When we have a dinner party, right? Or when it's a holiday, or when we're entertaining. So I wanted my book to be sort of the book that you would, the go-to book for entertaining. You know that if you're going to have friends over and you want to impress them, but you don't want to spend a week making your veal stock ahead and making your demi-glace, that you can just kind of do it quickly but really beautifully and impressively. And that was what I was thinking when I was, picking out the recipes. And when I'd call up the chefs, I'd say, think, home cook, think dinner party, and then they'd still give me something that was 25 pages long that I'd have to simplify. But
that's not the way it used to be. I remember my mother had her cookbooks out 3, 4, 5 times a week sometimes. And it just seems that the whole world has turned on its head, and we just don't cook like that anymore.
I think that's true, but you also probably the cookbooks that your mother used were a lot simpler than a lot of the cookbooks we have now, right? They were written by cookbook authors. They were written by people who were really in touch with what other people were making at home.
Right.
And I feel like it's been the last 2 decades, really, where chefs' cookbooks have, have just sort of taken off, and they're amazing. I mean, I love to flip through them. I love to, get inspired from them, but they're hard.
I think it's interesting just what we're talking about here about how so many cookbooks don't wind up being used and the dishes don't wind up getting made, yet people still buy them. I think there's an emotional thing that people want to see how it works and then go out to dinner. Don't you think?
I think you're right. It's like a behind-the-scenes look at the dish, right?
It is.
Oh, that's how it got on the plate.
Yeah, I mean, I like to read, there's an article in Time Magazine or in the New York Times science section about, medicine and how your internal organs work. I don't want to operate on myself, but I'm still curious about it.
That's a really good point. Well, then, you know what? I think that's true. I think for fantasy cooks or for people who just are complete foodies and love to go out to dinner, those kinds of chef's cookbooks are, they have a place, and they're perfect for that, and they're really, you read them and your mouth waters and you think, okay, when can I make a reservation? But then there are people who actually want to cook, so you've got both.
You know what, I'm reminded of a story, someone who went to a famous chef's restaurant, which shall remain nameless because I don't know whether this would be actionable if I told it or not, and I can't prove it. But she bought the $40 cookbook from the restaurant on the way out of the restaurant, came back to New Jersey, and tried to make this famous chocolate dessert.
Right.
And she's a very talented home cook. Try as she might, she could not make it right. And so she called up the restaurant and said, listen, I keep trying to make this, and I can't make it like you do at the restaurant. They said, oh, well, that recipe we leave a few things out. That's a secret recipe.
Oh, my God, no. That's horrible.
Literally told her that. And she said, well, I want my $40 back.
Yeah, exactly.
And you owe me for 5 pounds of chocolate that I bought.
Right. Don't give me – that's not a recipe. That's a pretty picture of your chocolate dessert.
You know, they're banking on the fact that nobody's going to actually make that recipe.
But you know what? And I think –
really surprised when your friend calls.
Right. Exactly. I bet that's the first time they got a call back. Our guest is Melissa Clark. She writes for the New York Times and Food and Wine and all sorts of stuff. She's written 14 cookbooks, and we're talking with her about Chef Interrupted, delicious chef's recipes that you can actually make at home. And one of the things we've talked about here is that this is a book that you can pick up and actually use. I mean, these recipes are not going to take you all day, and they're not going to destroy your kitchen. And I want to talk more with her when we come back from the break about some things that you can actually make at home and how you can use this and incorporate it into your life. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and stage left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The maragatta and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Catherine Lombardi and Stage Left Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And our guest is Melissa Clark, author of Chef Interrupted, delicious chef's recipes that you can actually make at home. The premise of the book is to take a chef's recipe and then when it gets a little too crazy for the home cook, to interrupt the process and make it more accessible for the home cook. When do you need to step in? What kind of things do you do, Melissa, that makes your dishes more accessible and doable that the chef just kind of barrels through?
Where do you interrupt them?
You know, there are two points that I interrupt them. Either a hard-to-find ingredient. For example, I was talking before about peeling sweetbreads or, like, you know, squab, you know, or quail, or just, like, an ingredient that home cooks don't usually find at the Key Food. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I try to take that ingredient, and if I do use it, I give a source for it, and I explain, like, how to deal with it. Because I think, you know, I mean, most home cooks I know don't know how to deal with, you know, ingredients that aren't, like, you know, salmon fillets or something really basic. And I know that I certainly don't want to deal with them unless I know the payoff is going to be big at the end.
Non-traditional ingredients.
I also want to tell you that your sourcing guide in the book is great.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's one complaint that I always get whenever I write something that readers, you know, if I write for the Times or for Food and Wine, if readers can't find it, it's so frustrating. And
yep.
I completely understand. So I always want to source everything. And luckily, you know, with the internet, you can just get anything in FedEx. You can get anything you want. But so I interrupted the hard-to-find ingredients. And then when it came to technique, I limited myself to what can I do in a couple of hours? You know, what can I make in an afternoon? I didn't want sub-recipes for several different kinds of sauces. I mean, chefs like to put a lot of garnishes on the plate. You know, you guys have seen that. You know, they like to, and that's why, I mean, half the time when I'm ordering a dish, I'm ordering it for those garnishes. I'm like, ooh, I want the creamy polenta cake, and I want the, you know, sauteed wild mushrooms. And that's great when someone else is cooking, but you know, when you're doing it, I basically tried to keep it to one or two elements on the plate. So, usually what I would do is I'd either go to the restaurant if it was in New York, or I would make the recipe as the chef originally intended it, and I would taste everything together and say, you know what, this is really good, but let's take this creamy polenta, you know, cheese thing, souffle, and let's put that as its own recipe and take it off this recipe, and let's just simplify. And, you know, the soul of the recipe, say, is juniper and rosemary pork loin. Let's just do that with a simple sauce.
So you've taken out a lot of the prep time without, say, making it a 30-minute meal or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that.
Some of them actually you can do on weeknights. You can do really quickly. I have this amazing little salmon. It's called a salmon rillette. It's basically poached salmon and smoked salmon, and you just mix it up with store-bought mayonnaise. And it doesn't sound like it's going to be anything. It is so delicious. I make this for every party now.
When we come back, we're going to be talking more with Melissa Clark about her book, Chef Interrupted, and we're going to talk specifically about her recipe for Turkish red pepper and walnut dip and how this book is structured a little differently than any other cookbook you'll find. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Our guest today is Melissa Clark. She writes for the New York Times, Food and Wine, Travel and Leisure, and, well, lots of other foodie publications. She joins us to discuss her most recent of 14 acclaimed cookbooks, the wonderfully titled Chef Interrupted, Delicious Chef's Recipes That You Can Actually Make at Home. Let me read for you from the Village Voice Online about this very topic. Melissa Clark, Chef Interrupted. The author has collected one or two quintessential recipes from 50 chefs, including Mario Batali, David Boulay, Danielle Boulud, and what they say is, why buy dozens of celebrity chef cookbooks when you need only one? And Melissa joins us to talk about that. Melissa.
Hello.
Let's get into the meat of the matter. So I think this is a great concept, and just to let our listeners know that the MO is the name of the dish and the chef. The prep time and yield is given.
Right.
Then, for chefs that you know, and it seems that you know most of these chefs pretty well, because you write a little something personal about the chef.
Right.
And I think that's great, too. And we'll talk about that in a moment. And then here's the dish, and then there's the chef's tips on preparation and your tips on preparation.
Right.
And I think that is awesome. So I have it here in front of me, your Turkish red pepper and walnut dip.
Uh-huh.
And
yep.
You have tips like, you'll say, here's a Melissa's tip. Peter would never do it, but you can purchase roasted red peppers to prepare this dip. So purchase instead of roast your red peppers.
Exactly, and that saves you time right there.
And this dish was done by Peter Hoffman at Savoy.
Right.
And then the chef gives tips. Now, how did you come up with the format of this book? And what are some of the tips that you find yourself giving over and over again?
Well, I often will give tips about buying something instead of making it. Like, we were talking about veal stock. You can buy veal stock. You don't have to make it. Or demi-glace, which is a reduced veal stock. You can buy it. And in this recipe, you can buy really high-quality roasted red peppers at Italian delis or, supermarkets in the jar, as long as they're, good quality.
Mm-hmm.
Chefs would never do that. They would roast their own. They would make their own. I mean, and that's part of what you're paying for when you go out to a restaurant. But when you're making it at home, you want to cut down on the time, and you want to take out anything that's not absolutely essential. So the kind of tips that I would give would be, okay, well, here's how to cheat. Here's how to sneak it, sneak something in and make it a little bit easier.
Well, I think a lot of times you can get, 90% of the way, 95% of the way with some of those, some good shortcuts.
Yes.
But they have to be good shortcuts. They can't be.
Exactly. That's the thing. You have to use good quality. If you're going to cheat, you can't use, supermarkets, cans. That's just like so salty you can barely taste it.
Like canned soup instead of a good soup that you can purchase.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's funny. My mom, she a can of Campbell's soup, depending on the type of soup, that went on everything when I was a kid. Everything.
Oh, yeah.
Mushroom
yeah.
soup.
Your mom did it differently than my mom.
My mom was Irish. Your mom was Italian.
I don't know. Would your mom have ever bought roasted peppers if she would have made her own?
My mom might have bought roasted peppers from an Italian deli.
Exactly. My mom would say, why would you eat that?
Good.
My mom might have bought roasted peppers from an Italian deli, but she never would have purchased like a can of peppers off the supermarket shelf.
Yeah, and that is the difference. You really need to, if you can get them from an Italian deli, those guys are doing the work for you. They're in the back roasting their own peppers, or they're getting them from a really good quality source, and that's important. What you want to look for whenever you're going to cheat and substitute something you buy in the store, just read the ingredients. If there's mm-hmm. things you can't pronounce, don't buy it.
Right,
for peppers,
right.
The ingredients should be peppers, olive oil, salt, things that sound familiar to you.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yep.
You know, But you give great tips in here, too. Now, if you do want to roast your own peppers, you know, Peter's talking about the fact that water should never touch your peppers. That was one of those things we just classically learned in my family. And he talks about using a paper towel. In my family, we would wash with olive oil.
Oh, that's a good idea.
As opposed to washing with
Hold
water.
Hold on a second. Mark, you just gave Melissa Clark an idea.
That's awesome. I'm going to use that.
Wow.
I'll give you full credit.
That's great.
That's what we would do.
You're like an idiot savant.
Well, it's my mom. I'm still an idiot.
You give your mom the credit.
Exactly.
Wow. I'm impressed with Mark right now, Melissa, that he impressed you.
I'm so impressed.
But that's what we would do. We would wash the peppers off with olive oil and thereby not washing the flavor off of the pepper.
That is such a good idea. And if I had a recipe from you in this book, that's exactly what I would, you know, that's the kind of thing that would come out in the conversation we'd have, and I'd write it down because I think that's brilliant. You know, people need to know that. A lot of the stuff that chefs take for granted, you know, chefs don't even know how to give tips often because they don't even know what are the things that home cooks don't know. Like,
right.
They don't get it. So I would talk to them, and then I'd figure out where the tips were.
Now, when you do these recipes, when you do a book like this, do you go and cook with the chef and watch what they're doing so that you can say, hey, wait a minute, you didn't tell us about that?
Yeah, you know what? Sometimes, I mean, when it was convenient in New York, I could do it, but I wanted to get recipes from chefs all across the country, and that was really important to me because I feel like I don't want to just be, you know, getting into this New York rut and chefs. You know, there's a lot of talent out there, and I wanted to tap into it. So I would do phone interviews and try to really get to, you know, try to go over the technique and figure out what the chefs were doing. A lot of times the chefs would just give me the recipe over the phone. They would just tell me what they did. And then I would, you know, figure out how to make it a recipe, and I would test it and go back to them. But even in them telling the story of the recipe, I would figure out what the tips were. I would, you know, I'd ask some questions like, so how do you do this? How do you do that?
Right.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that you mentioned that you took chefs from all across the country. Do you feel that the culinary talent is kind of diffusing its way across the country where most of it, I think, at one time was in New York?
I feel like it's always been there. I feel like what's happening nationally is that they're getting the credit, they're getting the attention that they deserve, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think New York has ever just been the only place to eat a great meal. I think most of the media is in New York. And because of that, you have, you know, I mean, I know that I'm skewed toward what I can actually go out and get.
You know, I got to tell you, you're in the media, and you're in New York.
Exactly.
You have any idea how hard it is to get people to pay attention to New Jersey? I mean, you could dance naked on the highway while cooking a souffle, and no, they're like, oh, that's Jersey.
You know, I'm just as bad as everyone else. I don't have a car. New Yorkers don't have cars. We're terrible. We can't even, it's easier for me to get to California. For me to get to Jersey because I take an airplane there.
Right. And you're like, I'm not going to rent a car just to go to Jersey.
Oh, God, rent a car? That just seems so hard.
Well, now let me ask you a question. You've worked with these chefs, and you obviously have from your book, you can tell, and your writing, I mean, we read you in the Times all the time, that you have long-term relationships with these people and you have their respect. Do you ever go to make a shortcut and the chef says, listen, Melissa, that's you've changed the dish fundamentally. That's not it.
I try to talk to them about what I'm going to do beforehand so that they don't, and, you know, sometimes they'll say, don't do that. I mean, I'll ask. It's definitely a conversation. And I have had chefs who said, you know what, I'm going to give you this recipe and you can't change anything. I'll change it. In which case I'll say, okay, interrupt yourself, you know, and then that'll work too.
But. And that works. You go back to them and say, listen, this is too hard. Change it. That's too hard. Change it.
Yes, exactly. If they feel like they don't want me to do it, they'd rather have control over it. I don't mind as long as they, you know, they do it in a way that still works for
right.
the philosophy.
So where he says, get out your chinois and your China cap.
Yes,
you say,
exactly. I'm like, okay, this is a problem. Ever hear of a food processor?
Yeah,
I did a recipe with a chef who I had been using a chinois for years, and he just never thought to put the darn thing in the food processor, and I made him do it, and he was so grateful.
Oh,
wow.
Well, one thing in this business, Melissa, and you alluded to this earlier, is we're constantly learning from one another, and that's such an important part of what we do is to keep take from one place and bring it to another place, and hopefully that your book is doing that for the home cook as well as even some of us.
Yes, and that's the best part about what I do is learning from people all the time. Every time I pick up the phone or I go to a restaurant, I learn something, and it's the best.
You know, it's funny. We've just recently entered into broadcast. I guess you could loosely call this journalism, but I don't want to too much of a stretch. But we've, you know, in the last year,
not the way you do it, anyway.
No, but I mean it is. But we've crossed over into a little bit of food journalism, and I gotta say it's really fun being able to talk about it. And we have these email conversations with these people all over the world. And you not only write cookbooks, but you also write feature articles. And I want to talk with you about your other kind of writing, specifically the article that you wrote in the New York Times about boxed macaroni and cheese. Just to show that we're not food snobs. Our guest is Melissa Clark. She writes for the New York Times. Her book is Chef Interrupted. We'll be talking more with her in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of The Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Catherine Lombardi and Stage Left Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Our guest today is Melissa Clark. She's a writer. She writes the New York Times, Food and Wine, Travel and Leisure, and all kinds of great feature articles like that. Her latest book is Chef Interrupted, Delicious Chef's Recipes That You Can Actually Make at Home. And if you'd like to purchase that book, we'll have a link up on our website, restaurantguysradio.com, and we'll direct you to where you can buy this great book and have it at home. Now, Melissa, we've talked about the book, but I love your feature articles. You are...
Thank you.
And well, I need to pay compliments where they're due. You're playful, aren't you? You're a playful little kitten, aren't you?
I told you.
I read your articles and I really like them. They're fun and informative, but they're light. And I love the article you did in the Times in January of this year called "Weighing In on the Boxes for the Fast Food Set," and it was about mac and cheese. Now every parent, Mark informs me, because I'm not a parent, has mac and cheese in.
You don't go to somebody's house without mac and when they're making meals for the kids without mac and cheese for the kids. You just don't go.
Right.
It's everywhere.
So what Melissa did was she for the New York Times, no less, took a bunch of the widely available national mac and cheese fast food meal replacement things and rated them, and they
think very highly of these foods. Well, I've seen you eat mac and cheese at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Never. Not
in 1984, I saw you do it. Right. Okay, mister?
At Hearth Restaurant, maybe, when they just made it. But the your ratings run from the Boston Market Macaroni and Cheese, and I'll take a brief quote, of all the brands, this one was actually good. Down to one of the amusing recount of Stouffer's, like a dish you would prepare for a convalescent who needs something soothing but couldn't stomach anything with strong flavor. I'm sure they love you for that one.
You know, I have to say, the Times, my editor at the Times, in all her wisdom, actually toned me down a little bit.
Oh, I would love to have seen the manuscript.
Oh, you got to send us the original.
I will.
Sorry, you got to email us the original.
It was a little bit sharper. Some of my friends called me when they read that article, and they said, it sounded like you liked all of them.
No, your friends. Hold on a second. I quibble with your friends.
We'll look a little deeper. We read between the lines.
Between the lines. Thank you.
Between the lines. Hold on a second. Let's go to the Velveeta review.
All right, we read the lines.
The Velveeta shells and the Moosewood Organic Vegetarian Macaroni and Three Cheeses. The two brands may seem to be polar opposites, but they have one characteristic in common. They're the least appealing of the mac and cheeses I sampled. And here's from the Velveeta review. With its characteristic pouch of squishy cheese, it was like pouring cheese whiz on pasta. But if you could get past the slightly sour and harsh flavor of the goop, you might be able to enjoy the satiny texture. It's been my experience as a restaurateur over the last 20 years or so, Melissa, that whenever anyone uses the word goop to refer to food...
Yeah, but I think they took out the word vial.
It came in a vial?
I think that
Melissa, I'm going to tell you, my kids made me buy the Velveeta once.
Yeah.
And then they made me throw out all the other boxes after we made it once.
Oh, they like this satiny texture.
Oh, no. They're like, okay, no, there it goes. Throw it away.
When I signed up for that assignment, well, my editor actually called me up and asked me if I wanted to do it. And I was so excited because I don't have kids. And every time I go to my friends' houses and they're making mac and cheese for their kids, I'm standing over the pot stealing food out of the babe's mouth, you know, because I love this stuff. It reminds me of my childhood. And so I was so excited to do this taste test and taste them all together. But it was really challenging to eat all of those. You know, I did, because you had to do them side by side. I couldn't do one night and another night. You had to do, you know, line them all up. Oh, my God.
Hey, listen, most of them are... Most of them are really terrible. And the one that you do mention that I like and that my kids like is the Annie's Organic.
Yeah, that one was pretty good.
It actually tastes like cheddar cheese instead of American cheese, I guess is the best way to describe the differences.
Yeah, it's got tang. It's got some verb to it.
I got to tell you, Melissa, if you are putting together a wine tasting panel or the caviar tasting panel, please call us.
You don't want to come to my mac and cheese panel?
You know, it's funny because Mark has four kids, and I don't have kids at all. And the last time I had mac and cheese, I was 12. You know, and I had the Kraft orange noodle macaroni and cheese. But I read it, and I was, you know, it was fascinating to me. It was like reading about, like, Antarctica or something.
Between the macaroni and cheese and
because at the end of the Antarctica article, you were interested, but you still don't want to go there.
But every time I go to somebody's house, it's mac and cheese or little chicken nuggets shaped like dinosaurs.
Oh, God. And
I don't understand why people can't serve real pieces of chicken to their
children.
The
disturbing thing about the chicken, this is maybe a fodder for an article, the chicken nuggets that are shaped like dinosaurs, see, at least the strips are actual pieces of chicken.
Yeah.
The chicken, if you to shape them like dinosaurs, you got to like break them down into chicken sawdust.
You know what you have to do to them to make them look like dinosaurs. Okay,
that's really
not
bad.
Pretty.
That's really bad.
Does not want to know.
All right, we only got a couple of minutes left, but I want to ask Melissa two things. First is if a home cook needs one piece of equipment that they might not have that they're going to go out and buy, what does a home cook need to have at home to be able to make good food?
Or the things in your book.
Oh, God. I mean, we assume everybody has a knife and a good skillet, right?
A sharp knife and a good skillet. We'll assume that. What's the next thing I need to go buy? Besides food processor, sharp knife, good skillet, what do you got to get?
Food processor is absolutely key. You've got a roasting pan. You've got, I would get, I know this sounds silly and it sounds like you're not going to use it a lot, but I use mine constantly. Go get a $28 Ben Reiner. Do you know what a Ben Reiner is? It's like a mandolin, which is a $300 expensive item. And what you can do is you can run vegetables through it. And they'll come out either as like shredded or in like perfect shreds or really thin, like just thin slivers. I use it all the time.
We're going to get from you what that
look fancy.
One of the few things that are on late night TV that you can actually buy and use.
Yes, exactly. And it's cheap and it really makes things look good and it saves a lot of time. I mean, who the hell wants to sit there and slice really thin little mushrooms or fennel? And if you just use the Ben Reiner, it goes in 2 seconds and you get this big, beautiful, something really impressive to serve people. And I'm always looking for shortcuts that look like I've spent a long time or look like I've, that look really impressive because, I want people to think I'm a good cook.
Yeah, I do too. That's why I buy stuff and throw away the containers before they get there. And I put it in a pan and like make the house smell like garlic or whatever.
Yeah.
But we're going to actually put that piece of equipment, which I've never heard of and I really don't know what the heck you're talking about.
Mandolin.
Mark is nodding his head.
All right,
well, we're going to put a link up to that on our website a little bit later. Our guest today is Melissa Clark. Her book is Chef Interrupted, which is a cookbook that you need to purchase. That'll be up on our website, restaurantguysradio.com, a little bit later. We'll be back talking with her in just a moment. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis. Our guest today is Melissa Clark. Her book is Chef Interrupted. That's what we've been talking about for most of the day, but she also writes for lots of great food publications. And you'll find out how to get that book and get to her if you go to our website a little bit later on. Melissa, we talked about the one piece of equipment that every home cook should have. What should everybody have in their refrigerator or their cabinet at all times that they may not have?
Oh, gosh. Well, we assume they have pasta, right? And everyone
yes.
has garlic and everyone has anchovies?
Yes.
Anchovies. Do you have anchovies?
Anchovies is a good one for the cabinet.
Like
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I think
like
everybody
it.
Should have it. Even if you think you don't like anchovies, if you mush them up in something, you don't even taste them. And they just add this, like, extra layer of complexity.
Like a briny saltiness that you hardly ever know exactly where it's come from.
Exactly. So I say get some anchovies. What else should you have? You should have some cream in your fridge. Do you have cream in your fridge? I think you should have a little cream. Heavy cream makes everything taste better.
I'm a single male restaurateur.
Francis has jelly, and he's got like four eggs.
And beer.
And he's got some English muffins in the freezer.
How about some bacon? Bacon's another one. Keep bacon in your freezer.
Bacon's
you know,
magical.
Well, and since I don't get to cook at home very often, I go out to dinner on my nights off. I eat at the restaurant when I'm working. I find that a really important thing to have at home is some canned stock. Like vegetable
yeah.
stock, chicken stock, because, you know, I made myself some pasta the other night, and I just threw the stock in there, and that was the bit I could make up a sauce in no time at all.
Yeah. Well, one of the things we said before on the show is if you ever do take the time to make a stock, pour some into your ice cube trays.
Oh, yeah.
You have single servings. Boom, boom, boom. Great, great way to store stock.
Yep. Although, you know, that's backfired on me a couple of times.
Oh, how's it backfire? Tell us.
Because, you know, the problem with doing that is then when you unmold it and you put them in your Ziploc bag because you can't keep them in your ice cube tray because you need to make ice in your ice cube tray, then it clumps together in one big, huge clump. Because and then you have to chisel it off. I like to do it in little yogurt containers is my personal way of doing it.
Nice. That's, see, new tip for us.
Yep, yogurt containers.
Yogurt containers is great.
I call the chef and ask for some
dummy.
Melissa, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today. You're great. Your book is great. And we're going to send people
your
way.
You're awesome, Melissa. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks. Take
Bye.
Care. That was Melissa Clark, and her book is Chef Interrupted. I really enjoy it. One of the things I enjoy about it, it's a shame that I let her hang up because I wanted to mention it there. She does talk about these chefs, and she obviously knows them well. She talks about our friend Peter Hoffman at Savoy and how Peter, you know, is very sincere and really the head of the buy local movement, the organic movement, et cetera, and so forth, and how, you know, a lot of chefs talk that game, but she sees Peter in the green market in New York regularly, as do we, because we're there as well.
It's true. You see, you know who's there. When you go, you know who's there, you know who's not there.
Here's a plug for Peter's restaurant. It's called Savoy. It's in New York. It's downtown, and it's not too far from the Union Square Green Market.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about Peter, and he's no Johnny Come Lately. He was at the head of this. He's been doing this for, you know, 15 years. Peter and his wife own Savoy, and Peter has a bicycle, and he rides in his chef pants his bicycle to the green market in the morning, where I often run into him with everybody knows the Peter bicycle, and it's got baskets all over it, which he loads up with his produce of the day, and he rides home with the, you know, with a little finger bell, ring, 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 right? And it says on the side of the bike, eat this food tonight at Savoy Restaurant. And I think that's absolutely the heart of the movement. So we'll put him up on our website as well. He's been a guest on the show. We'll put a link up on our website for him as well. Hope you've enjoyed the hour talking to the restaurant guys. I'm Francis Schock.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.